Is the underground scene for sale? Recent marketing campaigns appear to come from the underground, but they're actually paid for, promoted, and distributed by corporate dollars. Has punk finally sold out? What is going on with the underground scene? Here to talk about this is Anne Elizabeth Moore. She is the author of the cover article for the November-December 2005 Punk Planet Notes from Underground magazine. She's also the author of the books Hey Kids, Buy This Book, A Radical Primer on Corporate and Government Propaganda and Artistic Activism for Short People. That's available at Soft Skull Press. Also, Stop Reading This, a manifesto for radical literacy. That's available from Seattle Research Institute. She's the editor of the first two Comics Journal special editions from Fantagraphics Books, one of my favorite comic book lines. She's also the associate publisher of Independence Day Media and tons of other things. She's first published at the age of 15. Since then, her work has appeared in The Onion. Well, that alone right there. The Chicago Reader, The Stranger, The Progressive, and The Journal of Popular Culture, where I'm proud to say I have also published. Here to talk about the underground and what's happening to it is Anne Elizabeth Moore. Are you with us, Anne?
Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for being with us. It's quite a wonderful biography you have, and I'm real excited to talk to you about what seems to be going on in the underground. So maybe we should begin by trying to define exactly what's meant when we say that the underground is for sale. What is the underground?
Well, in Punk Planet, it's pretty easy to define the underground because it's pretty much our readers, hipsters, punkers, skaters, b-boys. But really what we're talking about when we talk about the underground is youth culture, the larger idea that people are doing things outside of the mainstream that just because they enjoy them. So it's kind of a fluctuating definition.
Because it seems kind of to be that same, trap of talking about music as being alternative.
Yeah.
So is there any way to, how do you tell if something's underground? How is it just kind of like pornography? You know it when you see it?
Well, you definitely know it when you're making it because you aren't getting any money for it, nor are you really getting any recognition from beyond your small circle of friends. So I think one of the reasons that it's hard to define is that it's not something that appears in our, it sort of appears as an element of our popular culture, but actual works in the underground, are changed if they actually move into the popular culture. So it's much more the things that are unseen that are just sort of practiced by, youth culture or sort of those of us who got older and set in our ways and didn't want to change at all when we were younger.
I think that a couple of the terms that are used in the article Scenes for Sale that might help listeners just get a sense of the terms that we'll be working with, because it'll really help to illustrate how the underground is being threatened, is one is the whole do-it-yourself approach to culture, to media, to silk screening t-shirts, things of that nature. And the other is maybe the difference between organic and inorganic culture. Could you maybe talk about those kind of techniques, and then we'll launch into some examples of maybe how things look to be do-it-yourself but really aren't?
Great. Yeah, DIY, which is, all caps, DIY, has become another tricky term to define because it literally means do-it-yourself, and it literally means that you should, or describes things that are actually created by oneself. But with the recent advancements in sort of craftivism and the marketing of these homemade, handcrafted products, DIY has become sort of a brand. So when we use it, though, in Punk Planet and when I use the term, I'm actually referring things that are hand-created and not sponsored by any sort of corporate or business entity.
Yeah, it seems to me that it's things that become popular not because of a multi-million dollar advertising campaign, but simply by word of mouth, simply by exchanging rather than marketing and rather than selling.
Exactly.
Okay.
And organic speaks to that as well. The organic growth or the organic popularity of something is something that we've all experienced when things are handmade. When a friend of yours makes a T-shirt that's really, really great and you want her to make you one, that's an organic growth, whereas an inorganic growth would be a marketing team coming in and giving away those free T-shirts in order to popularize them so that others will also want to purchase them.
Or seeing the shirt on a mannequin in a storefront window where, of course, the clothing manufacturers paid thousands of dollars in order to have the product placed so prominently in a store.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, let's talk about how corporate culture is, to use your word, misappropriating the methods of the underground. Why don't we start with the really fascinating tale, which I didn't know about Star Wars Episode III.
Well, the first thing to note about Star Wars Episode III is that it was a really bad movie. And I have you seen it?
I'm not really a fan of the Star Wars, so I'll take your word for it on that one. I have not heard good things about it. How about
no,
we say that?
No, I haven't heard a single good thing about it. But the thing is that I saw it, and the reason that I saw it was because I couldn't go anywhere in my life. And I live a very, very life that is very far removed from the mainstream. I work at Punk Planet, and then I write at home. And I sew a lot of my own clothes. I just don't get out very much, and I don't participate in that larger culture. And still, I couldn't escape Star Wars III. And it was because of an amazing marketing campaign that they had perpetrated to forward Star Wars III: Revenge of the Sith. And do you want me to describe that? Is that
yeah, please. Like okay. the stenciling, the stickers,
yeah.
the website.
So what they did was they sort of Bonnie Burton, who was the marketing person, as I understand it, behind this project, although they were very closed-mouthed about it, of course, put out a call to artists that sort of said, hey, send us your Star Wars stuff. And she also sent out a call to bands that said, hey, if you like Star Wars, you know, let me know, and I'll totally interview you on the Star Wars site. And I grew up with Star Wars, and that's it's a very emotional story for me. I mean, that literally tells the story of my childhood, you know. You know, the abandonment by your father and the sort of all these struggles that you go through to become your own person. And so all these people that were my age wanted to participate in the Star Wars ethos somehow. And a lot of them sent in materials to Bonnie Burton, and then she turned around and she sent them out from the Lucasfilms office. And then, of course, she and or the Star Wars marketing people turned around and wrote these articles that said, ooh, the underground is, you know, miraculously creating amazing works of art that happen to feature Star Wars people, and continued to sort of seed the notion that Star Wars was a very popular movie in the underground through these media campaigns. And so eventually, really, literally, this worked for me, and I actually ended up going to see the movie, which is an amazing thing for me.
So the art and the creativity and the culture of underground was kind of misappropriated in the sense that it was used not for its own creativity and not as an end in itself, but really as a means to market this, you know, mega, you know, I mean, a film that everyone knew was going to be a blockbuster anyway.
The misappropriation term comes in that these things were created and they were used, yes, to sell a product. Now, when you sit down, you draw a picture of Yoda at home, and maybe he's being hugged by Mr. T, and then you write a funny little slogan under it that says, you know, peace among the races. That's one thing. That's a very organic creation that you've made that uses images from popular culture. I'm sorry, train's going by.
That's all right.
You can hear that. But
that's the beauty of non-corporate radio.
It's true. But when you then sell that sticker or turn that sticker over to Star Wars and Star Wars distribute it as a marketing part of their film, then that has a different meaning. It has lost an essential element of integrity, and it's now a promotional item.
You know, and far be it from me to point out the obvious that Lucasfilms is distributed by Fox, which is News Corporation, which is Rupert Murdoch. So if we keep taking it a step or two removed, we could see exactly where the money ultimately is going.
Well, and it's really important to trace as much of that stuff back as you can to make it clear, yes, where your money is going or where your hard work is going. In terms of the underground, I mean, we're not a rich culture, you know? We just make amazing work.
I want to remind listeners that they're listening to KUCI in Irvine, 88.9 FM, KUCI.org, which broadcasts worldwide on the Internet. This is Justice or Just Us. We're speaking to Anne Elizabeth Moore. She is the author of Scene for Sale. It's the cover article from the November-December 2005 Punk Planet. I got to tell you, when I started letting friends and colleagues know that I was going to be talking to you about Scene for Sale, they said, got to talk about the Nike case. Can you tell our listeners who pretty much know some of the background, maybe not how it was resolved, exactly what was this Nike case with Minor Threat, Ian McKay, and Discord Records?
Over the summer, Nike Skateboarding, which has had a very contentious history in the underground, actually created a poster campaign for a tour that they were doing, which was promoting Nike skateboarding products. And it was a skateboarding tour. And they named it Major Threat. And then the image that they used was a direct reshooting of the cover image from the Minor Threat 1980 self-titled release by Discord Records. Now, Minor Threat is a band that, you know, in many ways sort of defines the underground. It's profoundly loved by the underground, not only because Ian McKay was involved in the creation of it, but also because he actually started his own record company, Discord, in order to sort of make sure that he was able to retain as much integrity as he could. So Minor Threat had been appropriated by Nike Skateboarding to popularize this skateboarding campaign for Nike, which is crazy. So Minor Threat freaked out, the underground freaked out, and everyone started sending crazy flames of hate mail throughout the cyberspace. And pretty soon, Nike Skateboarding was so frustrated that they actually pulled the campaign. Unfortunately, they only pulled it 5 days before the tour ended. And by that time, every single Minor Threat fan on the face of the earth already knew about Nike Skateboarding, which is an amazing, amazing feat of public relations. Even if any bad will was created, which in the end it turns out it wasn't, their message got out.
Right. I mean, there's no such thing as bad publicity. Well, but how do you respond to the fact, which your article, duly points out, that according to Nike, it was fans of Minor Threat that came up with the ad campaign as sort of an homage to Minor Threat?
Well, homages are a tricky legal term because and I actually just consulted a copyright lawyer about this last night, but that was a very direct violation of copyright law, no matter what. Even if Discord and Minor Threat refused to do anything about it, it was still a violation of a law that is on the books. And I think that it's right of Minor Threat and Discord to not do anything about it. But it was still, in the eyes of the law, wrong.
To interject, just because I want to make sure that I don't come across as hypocritical, not that you're being hypocritical, I don't misunderstand, but I've got, you know, the Negative Land Dyspepsy or Dice Pepsi. I never know how to pronounce it, but
Dyspepsy, yeah.
Okay, I've got that CD in my hand. And, I mean, is homage or parody, I mean, we're saying it's okay for Negative Land to take an entire album of Pepsi and Coca-Cola sound bites and show just how ridiculous it is to market something in that way. yet when Nike does it and it's possibly meant as an homage, is there a double standard going on?
Well, that's the tricky thing. A lot of people, in calling immediately for Minor Threat and Discord to sue Nike, were putting a double standard in place. And this is why Punk Planet actually came down on Nike's side in a very weird, you know, uncomfortable situation, agreed that Nike had the right to use this imagery and that they should be sort of not punished for using this imagery. But at the same time, the problems that that creates are very, very clear, which is the image that Ian MacKay in Discord was actually supporting Nike isn't correct. And those are the things that still need to be addressed, that, you know, intellectual property rights laws don't really cover those issues.
Right. And certainly listeners of this program are well aware of the concerns of Nike and sweatshop labor and so on and so forth. So we don't need to get into that. And I thought that that was one of the interesting parts about the article, was how it kind of came down on the side of not Nike's strategy, but on the side of not suing, which, you know, which I thought was quite interesting. Well, all of this raises the question, is the underground allowing itself to be co-opted?
Well, it is, and the issue of the skateboarders who were actually Minor Threat fans sort of perpetrating this homage/copyright violation in the first place addresses that directly. And what that means to me is that there is a much larger issue of loss of integrity on a sort of national scale, and also a misunderstanding of the notions of freedom of expression. And because we need to retain some integrity to be able to believe our sources, to be able to trust our sources. And when we, you know, don't really care who's putting out the product that we like looking at, we end up supporting things like Fox News or Shell Oil or Nike without even really thinking about it. And that's, you know, that's just going to continue to perpetuate really horrible things that none of us are in the end personally comfortable with.
Well, I think you've probably answered the one, you know, real devil's advocate question that I had to ask, but I'll ask it anyway, and then I'd love to be able to get into maybe some advice that you have on media literacy, you know, looking into your work with, you know, Hey Kids, Buy This Book. And on next week's program, I'll be interviewing Joseph Heath, who is the author of a book titled, in the United States, it's titled Nation of Rebels, though it's kind of more well known as, I think, the better title, Rebel Cell. And he is a co-author of this book, along with, I believe, Andrew Potter. And they are, you know, self-proclaimed lefties who believe that this preoccupation with culture jamming or with mass marketing and things of that nature kind of diverts the left or counterculture or underground's attention away from tackling real structural issues. That, you know, this is just kind of silly, trying to set ourselves apart from the mainstream or the masses, where if one is really, you know, a leftist, then they want to reach out to the masses to form a critical mass in order to change oppressive culture. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think that there are two issues at play here, and one is that that for one, a lot of the criticism of culture jamming comes out of a great disappointment that we all felt, and that I felt just as strongly as anyone else following the 2004 presidential election. And I think it's really, really dangerous, though, to consider changing a strategy based on our disappointment over, you know, losing that election, over leftists losing that election, because we don't actually know what happened in that election.
I'm not certain I understand the relationship to culture jamming, though.
Well, that those were the strategies that were popular that people felt like were really going to change the tide in favor of, well, against Bush.
Okay.
And when that didn't work, I think people started re-questioning again culture jamming. And so that's one issue. However, I actually don't believe that culture jamming is a very good strategy, because it basically takes elements of our culture that we use in our daily lives, and it represents them in a new way. And this is a fatal flaw, that you're actually representing things that you supposedly want to be fighting against.
So it's the same bad publicity is still publicity. You have to know what's being parodied in order to understand the parody.
Exactly.
Okay.
And I really think, and Dyspepsia is a great example. Like, it's a brilliant, amazing work of art. It's possibly one of the most popular, most, you know, important works of art that came out of the 90s. But I won't buy it.
Right, right.
Because I don't want to support anything positive about Coke or Pepsi.
And the irony, which is pointed out in the article, is that after hearing the album, Miller Genuine Draft contacted Negative Land to try to take all of the archives of the Miller slogans or logos or jingles and try to do the same, but for an advertising campaign for Miller Genuine Draft. Is that correct?
Yeah, and the thing is, Negative Land could have used that money.
Certainly they could have used
it. They don't make any money.
They don't. SST and their lawsuits and, yeah.
Yeah, so it is. It's very tricky negotiations, but, you know, that's sort of the cost of integrity. That's what you have to do if you want to be able to do work that you believe in and promote the idea of freedom of expression.
Well, let us get into maybe some of your other work and try to take a look at strategies. You're the author of the book, Hey Kids, Buy This Book, A Radical Primer on Corporate and Governmental Propaganda and Artistic Activism for Short People. Mm-hmm. How can, whether they're kids or adults or, you know, how do you sniff out whether there's this big corporate entity behind what appears to be part of the underground?
Well, again, you have to know your sources, and that doesn't necessarily mean limit your sources or rely only on things that you know, but taking what is offered to you as at face value just isn't going to work anymore. And with children's programming, I mean, the whole kerfuffle over PBS right now being funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, majorly funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which has enormous corporate interests, we're actually starting to see how these advertising and promotional messages are filtered down to a very, very young age and actually worked into educational programming. And that this is working, and it's been working for a long time, and no one's really noticed it, and no one's really found a way to stop it yet. So you have to do a lot of research, you have to really think about the messages that you're getting, and you have to understand that we live in a sort of corporate environment, and pretty much somebody wants to sell you something a lot of the time.
So when you talk to children, if you were to talk to children, what would be your first kind of bit of advice on how to watch TV, how to look at advertising?
Well, one of the things, because this information is hidden, that I actually put into Hey Kids, which is it was described as a little peanut butter and jelly sized book, is a little guide in the back that sort of allows you to trace back some really common products that are really popular with kids, like video games and movies, and trace them back to their major corporate owners. So, and also a lot of sports teams, which was really interesting. So one way is just to find those sources of information and make sure that you use them. Now, the other issues are, you know, all the things that we've mentioned before. Make sure that you research, make sure that you know your sources, make sure that you ask questions, make sure that you don't sort of just do what you are told to do. But the most important thing for me is also that youth actually make their own media and try to actually use their own voice and put out their own notions into the world so that they can see how media operates, as well as have a voice that rivals the voice that they're constantly receiving.
So rather than just be a dependent recipient of information or perspectives on beauty and culture be kind of the providers of that information as well. What about the idea of, you know, killing your television? There's this whole anti-television movement, which, you know, being a Simpsons junkie, I got to tell you, it's kind of difficult for me. But, you know, I think it's important to know the environment in which one is living. And I think it's important to know the enemy. What kind of advice do you give to children about, you know, just abandoning television and quote-unquote, mass culture altogether?
Well, I mean, my thing about killing your television, and I've lived without television for vast numbers of years, you know, on and off, is that you're not going to make it go away. And even if you don't watch it yourself, which, you know, I would strongly urge whoever can do that to do that, because it's actually pretty great. But it's not going to go away. It's going to be there. And you can ignore it as much as you want, but you should actually make sure that you have the tools to be able to interpret it when it starts to filter into your life. Because kids sing commercial jingles to each other all the time. They recite plots from sitcoms. They talk endlessly about commercials and TV shows and things that they experience on television. So it's a part of our youth culture, and we need to deal with that.
Well, we're just about out of time, but I was wondering if you can provide some, you know, give a couple of, certainly Punk Planet, but where do you recommend children, teenagers, adults go for alternative kind of underground organic information? Could be, you know, zines, could be websites, could be record labels. What do you recommend?
Well, there is, interestingly enough, a national distributor for independent magazines right now called the IPA, and they are located online at indiepress.org. And unfortunately, they're having Punk Planet is distributed by the IPA's distribution arm, which used to be called Big Top. And they are having some serious financial trouble. And so I would very strongly recommend that whoever is even slightly interested go look on the IPA list, find all the magazines that they can that are distributed by the IPA, and subscribe to them directly. Because the fact...
We'll say check them out, because we are right. Non-corporate, so we can't really say things of that nature, but they should go check them out. How about that?
Good,
okay,
good.
Great.
But these magazines are in vast trouble because this distribution is having difficulty and might not be able to survive. A vast number of them are actually having serious financial trouble right now. Punk Planet is a part of that. So check them out and offer whatever support you feel comfortable offering.
Okay. What about, sources, you know, online or for, for music or just, you know, information? I always promote The Onion because I think you get more accurate news in The Onion than you do in just about any other place, besides KUCI, of course.
Of course. Well, it's a lot of people get their news from The Onion or The Daily Show or the Kilborn or the Colbert Report. But I would strongly recommend actually going a little bit closer to the source and read as many blogs as you can and read. There's a great site called PR Watch that actually talks specifically about the sort of hidden machinations of public relations corporations.
We've actually had them on this show.
Yeah, they're great.
Yes.
They're great. So, and they offer a lot of really amazing, relevant news that ends up, you know, having been promoted by PR people.
Great. And if you can give us, is Punk Planet available online?
Well, we do have a site, punkplanet.com, and we also have various sources of information, although not all of our content is available online. But you can definitely find out more about us online.
And you should go to your local indie shop to find a copy of Punk Planet. And as we say on non-corporate radio, check it out. And you have a website, correct?
I do. Currently, the only thing available on it is my book, which you can download for free. and it's at AnnElizabethMoore.com.
And the book is titled Hey Kids, Buy This Book. And Ann Elizabeth Moore, we definitely have to have you back because you're a great, great interview. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Fantastic. I totally appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye-bye.